This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier, and it is Tuesday, so you know what that means. We got KOC on the show, Kevin O'Connor. Good to see you, man.
Great to see you, Tate. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, and I am obviously in the throes of March Madness right now. I am in my bunker at home. I am hunkering down, trying to get prepared for all things March Madness. So you look good in the studio. I like the shirt. Grady Dick is everywhere. So it's a good day to talk some NBA basketball. We're going to talk about March Madness a little bit later, but we'll start with the NBA. First and foremost, let's start with some trends. You got a trend for us, and it is Victor Wembanyama. He has been trending for quite some time in basketball circles, and right now he is playing some high-level basketball. Let's start there. What have you seen from Wimby lately, KOC, that you love?
Well, on Sunday, he had 33 points against the Nets. It felt like highlight after highlight. It's like, oh, I've never seen that before. Every single time he touched the balls, swooping layups, the block shots, the dad shot, shooting over a smaller defender. He did everything, and it just made me think about, in that game, with all those highlights, there's the scoring, there's the block shots. He's averaging 4.6 blocks per game since the All-Star break. This is amazing. But what's been overlooked, I think, Tate, is the playmaking. He's averaging 4.8 assists since the break. He had 7 assists in that game against the Nets, and he did it in every single way. He had assists where he was running pick and roll from the half court, using a screener, getting into the inside the three-point line, finding an open man. He had assists in transition. You fed him the ball in the post. He was able to locate teammates, draw attention, find the open man. I think with Victor, the playmaking is what has gone overlooked the past year, because that wasn't the key skill with him even prior to the draft. It was shot blocking, defense, and scoring upside. But the playmaking has improved so much in the past year since he was with Mets 92, particularly this year with the Spurs. Some numbers that I think indicate that. According to NBA.com, in the first quarter of the season, so he's played 60 games this year, the first 15 games, Victor got 61 touches per game. The second quarter of the season, 66 touches per game. The third quarter of the season, 76 touches per game. And then in his last 15 games, the last quarter of the season, 79.5 touches per game. The Spurs are feeding the ball to Victor Wembanyama increasingly over the course of the season, and he continues to get better with the opportunity. And we saw that on Sunday with his 7 assists, just doing it all in every area of the game.
I love touch stats, and I do think that he should be getting around 90 touches a game. I mean, he should be the focal point of the offense. And everyone that's been watching this team, right? I mean, it's almost become a running joke. They've been talking about, how do we get this guy the basketball? Jeremy Sochan has taken a lot of the brunt of the blame in those situations. But it's good to see that Victor, as the season has kind of waned on, he is getting more and more touches. And Greg Popovich had a great quote, KOC, that you and I were talking about before. He said that he has Bordeaux's. Those are wines. He has some wines that are older than Victor Wembanyama. So that gives you kind of a reference point for how good he is, how young he is, and how great he can be. So how encouraging is it? I mean, obviously he's the rookie of the year, but like, if you're just forecasting the future of the Spurs, like, is he ahead of schedule by a long way at this point? Like, is it one of those things where we're talking about championship window getting closer and closer?
I do think he's ahead of schedule. I mean, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Tate, we looked at my top 50 players in the NBA. I had him 15th. A lot of people on social media said, oh, it's reactionary. It's too soon. I think I was too low on him. I think he's more like 11th, maybe 10th best player in the league right now. The dude is absolutely ridiculous. And you think about what he's going to be next season as he continues to work on his body, as he continues to hone his three-point jumper, as he continues to further improve his feel for the game and look at how he can improve even more as a playmaker, as he gets even more touches per game, as he's playing more minutes. Think about it, he had a minutes restrictions this year. Mm-hmm. Victor is already a player great enough to lead a playoff team. It's just a matter of the Spurs getting the right supporting pieces around him. Their bench stinks. They don't have enough shooting around him. They need to find a point guard better than Trey Jones who can shoot, because he shows how important having that playmaking small guard is with Victor, and on defense too, a good point of attack guy. So I think with the Spurs, if they can find the right pieces around Victor, they're going to be a playoff contender as soon as next season. And when you have a guy on a rookie contract, it's kind of like, you know, a rookie NFL quarterback or a NFL quarterback on a rookie deal. You can take advantage of having that guy on a smaller contract. So I don't think there's necessarily big-time pressure on the Spurs, you know, to really go pedal to the metal. But I do think that they should take advantage of the fact that they already have an arguable top 10 player who is incredibly young and is only a rookie, and the next 3 years, this is a window here to take advantage of.
Yeah, future face of the league. Let's talk about guys who are the former faces of the league, or maybe the present faces of the league, depending on how you want to talk about it. But Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Saturday they play each other. AD goes out early in this game, but these two go at it, and we get the fourth quarter. And unfortunately, the NBA officiating is my trend, because we have 3 replay reviews and 4 shot clock malfunctions in the fourth quarter of this game. You give me an eye roll, I'll give you a head shake. What's going on here, KOC, and what's happening with NBA officiating?
It was disgusting, Tate. It was one of the worst displays of basketball I've ever seen, because it wasn't even basketball. It was just watching an official stare at a screen for 20 freaking minutes. You had Ben Affleck and J-Lo taking a nap sitting courtside. It was horrible. It was
some Dunkin' Donuts coffee, KOC.
it was genuinely the worst end of a game I've ever seen. We've seen a lot of NBA games that are terrible at the ending because of replay reviews and all that. It's the type of game that it might turn me into an extremist, saying get rid of replay review. It was just inexcusable. But ultimately, you know, we've seen Adam Silver and the NBA make a change in the second half of the season. After January 31st, they have essentially swallowed their whistles. They're not blowing the whistle. Fouls are at a low, as we talked about in a recent episode of the show. Why don't they do the same thing with replay review? Why not subtly install a 30-second clock or a 60-second clock on all reviews? Let's get this going. Let's get this moving. Because what happened there was inexcusable.
Inexcusable for these two stars to have that be the talking point after the game. It is March Madness, so maybe not all eyes are on the NBA right now. People watching college basketball conference championship tournaments that night. But it was not a good look. We did not like to see that. And the boys in Secaucus, let's get it together, because if they don't, KOC, they're going to get less and less reviews and less cutaways to Secaucus. So that's not good. Now we're going to have some fun. We do our superlatives. I'll start with you, KOC. What is your first superlative? We got surprise of the week, right? Correct?
Surprise of the week, Bam Adebayo. He's hit a three-pointer in 3 straight games. That's as many as he's had in any full prior season of his entire career. All 3 of them, including a game-winning jumper on Sunday against the Pistons, came from the top of the key, right at the top of the key. And I just wonder, with Bam, he's somebody who he's shot over 40% on mid-range jumpers this year. He's worked to extend his range in each season of his career. Is this the beginning of Bam taking more threes? The shot looks good. The mechanics look clean. They're going in. Maybe for the Miami Heat, this is a weapon that they're going to utilize come playoff time. And I think for the Heat, if this is real, it adds a brand new ingredient to Bam's game, opening driving lanes, more ways to run dribble handoffs with all their shooters, Duncan Robinson. I look forward to seeing if this is a trend that actually continues, but surprise of the week is Bam shooting threes.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And Bam is one of those guys where they've always tinkered with Bam. I remember at Summer League, he was playing point guard for a little bit just to kind of see what he did with those ball handling duties. So the Miami Heat are not afraid to put Bam Adebayo in uncomfortable situations and let him grow into those roles. So him as a stretch five is a very good sign for Miami Heat fans. So I like that. Surprise of the week. I got one for you, KFC. Buzzer beater of the week. Kyrie Irving hit one of the most ridiculous buzzer beaters I have seen in all my years watching watching basketball. It was a left-handed floater from about the free throw line as he's basically fading across the basket. So he's throwing it back across his body with his offhand, his left hand, and then he looks down at his left hand as he hits the shot. Luka Doncic was, I think, just as shocked as anybody. And I think the big point here is that he did it against the defending champs. KOC, what was your thoughts when you saw the shot from Kyrie Irving and just your thoughts in general on this Mavericks team?
My jaw actually absolutely dropped. I was shocked. I wasn't sure he was going to get the shot off.
Exactly.
It was incredible. It's like we talk about the end of that Lakers-Warriors game. It was terrible. The end of that Mavericks-Nuggets game was one of the best endings of the entire season. It was just
absolutely pure,
beautiful basketball ending on, you know, a gorgeous shot by Kyrie and in front of Jokic, too. A guy who can appreciate that perhaps better than anybody on the entire planet. It amazed me. I think for Dallas, despite, you know, some ups and downs recently, I'm still very high on them after their acquisitions at the deadline, getting Daniel Gafford at center, PJ Washington at forward. It helps stabilize their defense. And when you have shot makers at the level of Luka and Kyrie, you always have a shot to close out games, especially against opponents as great as the Nuggets.
And that was the whole idea when they got Kyrie, right, is that they have another guy that, you know, Luka can rely on to hit some of these big shots. He did it next to LeBron James. He's now doing it next to Luka Doncic. So very encouraging for the Mavericks. And like you said, I like the way that they address the front court issues. Next superlative, we got jersey exchange of the week. This is a great one, KOC. I feel like your shirt is leading us into this conversation.
Yeah, I wore this Grady Dick shirt out of respect. Yeah. For the definitely not intentional at all jersey exchange between Anthony Black and Grady Dick.
Yeah. Either way that they stood, Kevin, it wasn't going to sound well or wasn't going to look good. And they're both young guys, and I think they were laughing to each other. They're obviously rookies in their first year in the NBA, and I think they had a little bit of a rookie fun. You know what I mean? That's all it is.
You see the Magic deleted their social media posts.
Yeah, probably for the best, you know what I mean? Not safe for work. So I think that was a fun little exchange there. And Grady Dick, Anthony Black, both very good players.
Very good.
And guys that we're going to see in the league for a long time. All right, last superlative. I got this one for you, KFC. Loss of the week. And no, it's not a wins and loss in the category. It is a loss, weight loss variety. Zion Williamson has lost 25-plus pounds since the NBA in-season tournament. Kevin O'Connor, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? This is being reported by Brian Windhorst. How do we feel about Zion losing 25 pounds?
I mean, it's absolutely incredible, and it's translated to the court. He looks faster. He looks more explosive. He looks more like the guy that we saw fly in to block a DeAndre Hunter corner three in college. He is absolutely sensational right now, playing the best basketball of his entire career in the Pelicans, you know, with Herb Jones on defense, Brandon Ingram supporting star on offense. They have the number one defense in basketball this year. They look like a team that, when I say this year, I mean this calendar year. They look more like a team that could potentially make a run, especially right now. They're only a game back from the Clippers for the 4 seed. They actually might end up with home court, Tate. That blows my mind. The Clippers are falling apart, and the Pelicans continue excelling.
And that game against the Clippers was kind of a signal to the rest of the league, I felt like, from Zion. One, that he's here and that he's in shape. And two, Kevin O'Connor, we need him at the Olympics. I know Grant Hill's putting the roster together, but Zion Williamson needs to be on that team. That's just a little PSA here for me. But I like that. Zion, loss of the week, 25 pounds. Let's do some Tuesday game previews. Let's talk about the Mavericks and the Spurs. We talked about Wimby. We talked about Kyrie's game winner. We got a matchup between these two teams. What do you like to see in this Texas showdown between the Spurs and the Mavericks?
I just want to see some Victor Wembanyama defending Luka pick and rolls, Kyrie pick and rolls. How do the Mavericks attack him? We saw Jokic over the weekend against Wemby hitting floaters like high off the glass in order to score over Victor. How do Luka and Kyrie end up responding against him? How are they able to create buckets?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a fun matchup. And anytime you get faces of the league, Luka, Wimby, going at each other, it's worth watching. But this is the time of March Madness. This is the 1 week, Kevin, that I get as someone that covers college basketball. This is all we get. They give us 1 week where we can go all the way in. And we got the first four in Dayton starting Tuesday night tonight. Colorado State versus Virginia. Virginia is a team that the casual fan seems to hate just because of their play style. It is tough for them to score 50 points. This is Tony Bennett basketball. This is what what he does. They're taking on Colorado State, which has become a little bit of a darling out there in the Mountain West. Kevin, I'll just ask you the general question. Are you going to be watching these first four games and March Madness in general? Because sometimes there seems to be some contentious energy between the college basketball, people that cover college basketball and the people that cover the NBA. But you'll be watching, right? You're an ally. We need you. We need all the eyeballs we can.
Tate, of course, 100%. I'm excited. This is one of the best times of the entire year. This is the time of year where, for me, college basketball takes the front seat. And NBA has to take a little bit of the backseat, especially on the days that we get the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight here in Los Angeles, the Final Four in Arizona. You and I will be there. Of course, NBA is going to take the backseat for some of these weeks ahead.
Yeah, I love it. Kevin texted me earlier, and it's like, I'm going to the Final Four. And I love that feeling. I love the fact that you want to be there. You want to see it in person.
It's going to be my first. No, I've never been to the Final Four.
Wow, first Final Four for Kevin O'Connor. There's your big report right there. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. What a great day it is for me and for all the fans of college basketball. We'll be right back with KOC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer here with Kevin O'Connor. And I promise you, before the break, I was giddy that we were going to talk about college basketball. And you know how we usually do this. We do new kids on the block. And we'll start with a new kid on the block from South Carolina. This is the guy that you're a big fan of, KOC. I'll let you take it away. He's our guy to watch in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
We'll get Colin Murray Boyles. He is a freshman from South Carolina. Unexpected potential one and done. He's hinted that he could be a two and done. He might go back to school. We saw him score 24 points against Arkansas, and then he had a stinker, only 4 points against Auburn in the conference tournament for South Carolina. But 6'7", he's a big-bodied, long-armed forward. Can play a little small ball center, perhaps. Can facilitate a little bit. Scores at the rim. He's just got a lot of skill on the offensive end besides shooting. That's what he needs to improve the most if he does go back to school. And then defensively, I mean, he's one of the best defenders in all of college basketball. He's versatile. He can block shots at the rim. He can switch screens. He's active. He hustles. He's got a motor that just never seems to stop. If South Carolina makes a run this year in the tournament, I think Murray Boyles is one of those guys that you're going to see increasingly popping up on NBA draft radars, when so far he's been more like kind of that online draft nerd type of player that people are watching. But I think if South Carolina wins some games here, he'll pop up on a lot more boards.
Yeah, I was talking to you about this before. We saw this kind of like with Jaden Ivey a couple years ago when Purdue was in the first round. It was like he's got all the tools. He looks like an NBA prospect. But if they make a run in March this year, then he'll probably go to the NBA draft. They end up losing in the first round. Not to say that's going to happen to South Carolina. His dad has said that he's a two-and-done type player as opposed to one-and-done. Lamont Paris said that he is very far away from reaching his ceiling, which is a high compliment because he's already playing some really good basketball. So he's a guy that will be playing at the next level. We just don't know when that decision will be made. But like you said, Kevin, if they make a run, he might have no choice other than to make the decision to go to the NBA. And when the draft nicks like you, you got to get it in there and make it happen. So I like that pick. And Lamont Paris has had a great year with South Carolina. So we'll see what happens there. Again, as a sixth seed, you never want to go up against a team that just won their conference tournament in Oregon. So that'll be a tough matchup in round one for South Carolina, but something we will definitely keep an eye on. We got some more March Madness stuff that we want to hit. We kind of split this up, right, into two categories. KOC usually does his power rankings. We got two lists here, two power rankings. The first one, March Madness prospects with the most to gain in the tournament. Take it away, Kevin. Who's your number one guy with the most to gain in March?
Let's go with Jared McCain, freshman point guard from Duke. He just feels like the type of guy with a skill set, with his perimeter shot-making ability, his playmaking ability, his activity, that if Duke ends up going to a Final Four or even wins at all, McCain is somebody that could potentially move himself into a clear lottery status. Right now, he's a first-round pick on, I'd say, virtually everybody's board. But at 6'3", he's a little bit on the smaller side. If he excels in the tournament, I think he could definitely raise his draft stock. I feel the same way about Stephon Castle, another guard, bigger guard from UConn, a little bit different. It's the opposite with him compared to McCain. With Castle, you know he's going to bring defense, one of the better defenders in college basketball. You know he brings downhill attacking and playmaking, but you know how it is in March. Every team's going to be game planning. They're going to be going under screens, trying to force him into a shooter. Can Castle, as a potential lottery pick, make those teams pay? Can he have a stretch where he's hitting jumpers? That could make him maybe a top two, top three pick if he excels this month. And then Zach Edey. Everybody knows Zach Edey at this point. Purdue's been a one and done in the tournament twice in his 3 years so far. They've been to one Sweet 16. If they could get to a Sweet 16 again or go even further, if Edey can survive on defense and not be exploited, that could do a lot for his draft stock. So I think with those three, McCain, Castle, Edey, they're the prospects that, to me, have the most to gain this month.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. And Castle's one of those guys. Let's say UConn goes and they repeat as champions, which if you've looked at anybody that's a quote-unquote expert, they have pretty much picked UConn to be the national champ. If he goes on a run like that, he already broke Carmelo Anthony's record for most Big East freshman of the week. It was a record that was held by Carmelo, then AI before him. So a good group for him to be in. He kind of looks the part of an NBA guard, and I feel like there's a chance he could be the first college player off the board when all things are said and done. If they go on a run and repeat. So I think Castle is a good pick. And then Edey was a guy who went from off draft boards to now he's all the way up. I've seen him as high as number 13 on some of these draft boards. So I think those are good calls.
Do you believe in him, Tate? Edey? Right. Do you think he's improved enough on defense?
I think he's improved enough on defense to get a look. I'm not sure he's a lottery look, but I mean, when you have anyone that has that type of size, you have to be intrigued by it. And, you know, we've seen guys that are 7'4", 7'5", 7'6", that aren't able to perform and to, you know, deliver like he has. And I think the free throw shooting has gotten better. It's not quite where you want it to be, but it's gotten better. If he can get out to the 3-point line, that would be even more encouraging. But you know this, Kevin, every NBA roster is looking for bigs. They just want bigs, so he can be one of those serviceable bigs. He'll have a long career in the NBA, so I like that. Most of the game there. Now let's do some sleeper prospects for March Madness. Who do you got here, Kevin?
Zion Pullen from Florida. That is my favorite sleeper in the entire nation right now. Zion Pullen, 6'4", senior transfer, leads the nation in assist to turnover ratio of draft eligible prospects. Pullen, to me, is just one of those guys that I'm shocked he's not on more draft boards. You look around the league at guys like Tyus Jones or even like a TJ McConnell type. There's just so many guys that bring Andrew Nembhard, that bring these qualities that teams need from a backup point guard. Reliable shooting, Pullen's at over 40% from three. Reliable playmaking, the dude does not make mistakes. And very good defense. I think Pullen for Florida is my clear number one sleeper in all of scouting the college basketball right now.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And Walter Clayton, who's also in the backcourt with him, that played for Patino last year at Iona, got recruited hard to go to St. John's, ends up going to Florida. I mean, Florida is one of those teams where if they were fully healthy, you could talk yourself into Florida running the table, getting to the Final Four, and potentially going to win the national championship. That's how good they have been late in the season. And Pullen and Clayton are big parts of that. So I think that's a good pick. I like that at number one.
Yeah, he's excellent. And I mean, it will be interesting to see if he has some big scoring nights as well, because he's primarily a playmaker, a facilitator, settles things down. But could he and Clayton have like a dual scoring night? I also have the Dayron Holmes from Dayton on my list this year. He went back to school. He's improved his three-point shooting. He is a shot-blocking center. Everybody's looking for bigs who can shoot threes and who can block shots. And Holmes is somebody that has also displayed the ability to switch some screens, defend on the perimeter, too. So I think for him, he's obviously a well-known college basketball player. He's still listed as a late first-round pick on some boards. But I think he's a sleeper in the sense that if he weren't playing at Dayton, if he were playing at North Carolina or Duke or Kentucky, maybe he's the type of guy that could be a top 10 pick. So I think he's a sleeper in that sense.
Yeah, we were talking about there's a difference between college basketball commodities and NBA prospects. And a lot of times it kind of gets lost in the sauce about, you know, one guy is a well-known entity, but he's not on, you know, NBA radars. But he's one of those guys that I think will move up in the conversation depending on how well he plays. And Dayton in that first round game plays Nevada, so they'll be playing Steve Alford. So that'll be a good matchup. And then the last one you got, number three here, is Harrison Ingram. Am I correct about this? My North Carolina Tar Heel? Yep, so we can talk about that. That'll be fun.
Your guy, Harrison Ingram, transferred from Stanford. He's been good this year for you guys. You know, he's shooting threes. He can play make a little bit, versatile defensively. Has not shot the ball well last six, seven games or so, Tate. And that's the biggest concern that teams had when he was at Stanford. Is that anything to worry about? Is he going to have to turn that around in March for North Carolina to make a run? Or is the shooting kind of an additive skill on top of everything else that he brings to the floor? Because he's versatile player.
Yeah, throughout the season, he's been timely with the threes that he does make. It's not necessarily like he's hitting at a high volume, but he felt like he always hit the three that you really needed to hit for momentum purposes, right? He's kind of had that knack throughout the year until the ACC Tournament Championship game. That's the first time he really has struggled in that sense. He had a little bit of a wrist injury that was affecting his shooting a little earlier in the season, but I think him playing the four, he's kind of a small ball four. He's been able to play out of the post. He's been able to pass out of the post, find guys. He's his own double-double machine. That's why Carolina's had such a good year, because they have Armando and they have Ingram, so they basically dominated the boards with those two guys. So his activity level is the big thing and his motor. And, you know, Seth Greenberg keeps comparing him to Draymond Green. I don't like that comparison, but I do see the way that they play with their hustle and their energy and their impact, especially on the defensive end. I can see why there is some sort of comparison there. So Harrison Ingram is one of the most important players in the country for North Carolina to go win the national championship. So he is an important cog. As much as people know Bacon, they know RJ Davis. Harrison Ingram is vital to the ceiling of this team in general. So I could see him playing on an NBA team and being a really, really good role player for sure.
To me, the Draymond comparison is something that you don't want to utilize very often, but I do think it applies to the first guy we mentioned, Colin Murray-Boyles. I think it applies to him because of the playmaking ability with his size, the defensive versatility, and maybe he develops a reliable jumper with his lefty shot. The free throw percentage has improved over the course of the season. He's at over 80% since February 1st. It's encouraging to see him shooting the ball better. And if South Carolina makes the run, maybe we do hear that Draymond Green comparison applied to him on the national stage at some point. But I don't love it for Ingram, but I do like it for Murray-Boyles.
I like that circle back, KOC. You're a real pro at this. We love to see it. Where can we find all your work? And then we'll let you go enjoy your Tuesday and get ready for the madness.
My mock draft was updated on Monday. You can find that at nbadraft.theringer.com. We'll be expanding to a 2-round mock draft later this month during March Madness. So I look forward to that as well. This week we did a college only mock draft, Tate. Only college prospects. Stephon Castle went number one in this one.
Yeah, I like it. I think that's a great pick. And you're doing the Lord's work over there, KOC, trying to get people up to speed on what's happening with college basketball. So we appreciate you. I love having you on Through the Ringer, and we'll see you next week, man.
I'm looking forward to it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
welcome back to Through the Ringer. Joining us now, you know him well. We always have him on the show on Tuesdays. We are truly blessed here. He is Cousin Sal. Sal, great to see you, man.
It's great to see you, Tate. I mean, you have already, it's Tuesday, and you've done more interviews than Oprah already. It's insane what you've gone through.
I've actually learned a lot through the years doing these mini radio hits where they ask you your picks, Sal. That's what they do. They bring you on these shows and they say, give me your picks. And then people can blame you when your picks are wrong. Last year, I famously picked Arizona. They famously lost to a 15 seed Princeton. The rest is history. So this year, I've just been peppering different picks around. So I feel like you just keep shooting and you see what happens.
If Boise State wins it, you were on a radio station somewhere where you gave out Boise State. That's what you should have taken this week off, Tate. What would Simmons have said if you took this week off?
Maybe he would be upset that I wasn't talking about Caitlin Clark. I think that would be the biggest thing that he was upset about. So it'll be okay. Yes. Right. It's March Madness time, the best time of the year, but we're going to play my favorite game, over under reaction. Sal, are you ready for that? I mean, it is the best time of the year and I have to play my favorite game.
You're getting a little too much bang for your buck here. Best time of the year, favorite game. Wow. You're such a spoiled little child, but let's do it.
I know it's too much. I think I'm just glowing at this point. I'm just beaming with a big smile. But let's start with the NFL with the first over-under reaction. Justin Fields will be the Steelers' starting quarterback by the end of this season. What say you, Sal? Is that an overreaction or underreaction?
You've already had enough of college basketball.
We're done.
I don't get the Justin Fields thing at all, Tate. I don't get it. Like, it seemed like 3 weeks ago where everybody was saying, oh, the Bears could get a one. They can get multiple ones. They can get a one and a two for Fields. Well, they didn't. They got a six for Justin Fields. All the quarterbacks suck, and we finally have a good one, and his only value is a sixth rounder. I don't understand. Nobody likes this guy, not even the Steelers, because they won't even name him their starter. So I'm gonna say it's an underreaction. I think he will start. But like I said, even the Bears, the Steelers haven't named them their starter. They're plus 950 to win the division with Russell Hustle and Bustle taking snaps.
Yeah, it's a very strange situation to create a QB battle. But I guess we live in a two-quarterback NFL at this point based on what we saw last year. So that's what they're forecasting. But very strange all in all. Next one, Sal. We will never see another defensive player as dominant as Aaron Donald, who decided he was going to announce his retirement from the NFL. What say you, over or under reaction?
Well, it's an underreaction, but only if you never watch a Cowboys game at number 11 the rest of your life. I mean, Micah Parsons is just as dominant. No, listen, I love Aaron Donald. I don't know if he's the most dominant of all time. I think he is going to go down as one of the most underappreciated of all time. He got his ring. He got his money last year. I'm glad for that, but good for Aaron Donald. Little bit of an overreaction to say he's the most dominant we will ever see.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of dominant defensive players. Lawrence Taylor, one of the first ones that comes to mind, and you could build up from there. Obviously, he was the last one to win MVP, so that's a conversation for another day. Next one, Sal. Michigan State going to the Sweet 16 because of Tom Izzo is the laziest bracket analysis around. They call him Mr. March. What say you, Sal? Overreaction or underreaction? How do you feel about putting Izzo in?
I kind of agree with this. I'm going to say it's not an overreaction, which make it an underreaction. By the way, I did some research. This is how lazy everybody is. Tom Izzo hasn't coached Michigan State since 1995. He hasn't even, and people just say it and say it and say it, and you think he's still coaching. No, of course he is, but they're suckering you in. I'm going to say that Mississippi State wins. That's how lazy this is. I think that's the very first game. Can't you see it, Tate? I think we're going to be there. 9:25 tip off West Coast. Tom Izzo's team against Mississippi State's virtually a pick 'em. Everyone's going to be on Michigan State. Go Mississippi State in that game.
Yeah, I feel like the safe move is just to write MSU in your bracket.
Yes.
And then no matter what, you're always going to be right with this first game.
You get
game.
A point.
Right. Yeah, that's what I like to do with Villanova and Kentucky back in the day. Just write Wildcats, you know what I mean? And then you just keep rolling along. Next one, Sal. A play-in team will make it to the Sweet 16, over or under reaction?
I agree. I think Howard University beats the North Carolina Tar Heels, and that's it. And they go on and they beat Mississippi State, who I just mentioned there. No, does Howard have a chance, Tate? I know you like that team.
I like the storyline of Howard, you know what I mean? Gus Johnson's alma mater, who's obviously a voice that we love in March Madness, so that's always good to see. And then you got Seth Towns, I was telling you about. He's older than Jason Tatum, eighth year of college basketball. Yeah. He's been in school longer than Van Wilder, so that says a lot about where he is.
I like when the college players are older than me. It's rare when it happens, but sometimes it pops up. Now, I actually think if this is going to happen, it's another reaction. Colorado State, Virginia has the best shot of beating Texas, and then Tennessee. By the way, you put UT, you probably get a win there either way.
Yeah.
Longhorns were just 2-7 against teams with winning records in the Big 12, so they're ripe for a picked off.
And last year, Texas kind of had this magical run to the Elite Eight, so I feel like they're going to go back to return to the mean a little bit. All right, last one, Sal. We've already heard too much about James Madison. Over or under reaction? A lot of people like that 12-5 upset.
James Madison, the president? I feel like I have to root for the fourth president of the United States. I have to root for him a little tick because I know that he was 5'4", the shortest of all presidents. But you tell me about the team. I know they're coming in with the 13-game winning streak. I feel like we've heard enough about them, Grand Canyon, and McNeese State to last a lifetime.
Yeah, I like the backcourt of JMU. Terrence Edwards is a guy who's probably going to be on NBA radars. You got Bickerstaff as well in that backcourt. So they're a fun team. Let's go to the captain who likes to play with lots of things. He is our Riverboat question of the week, and our Riverboat captain is the question this week is, what will be the most memeable moment from this year's tournament? We got the odds here, Sal. Oprah with the busted bracket mean. You get a busted bracket. It's 3-1. We got Jim Carrey with the perfect bracket, 7-1. So you're saying there's a chance 1 in 92 quintillion to get a perfect bracket, but everyone seemingly thinks they're going to get it every single year. The crying flute player that we saw famously back in 2015, the Villanova flute. Also, NC State was the team that upset Villanova there. They're going to be back in Pittsburgh. That's a 10-1. And we got the Sister Jean crying Jordan meme. No Sister Jean in the tournament, but we do get Sister Meme 25-1 in the field at even odds. What say you, Sal? A lot of memeable things happening in March.
These are all so good, Tate, and I like them for all different reasons. But because it's a meme, I'm going to go field, and I'm going to combine a couple. I'm going to say that one's going to be created, and it's going to be that one of Sister Jean and crying Michael Jordan getting run over by Wake Forest fans who win their first round game in the NIT. Yeah. And you see Sister Jean in the wheelchair tipped over, fans running over her, crying Jordan face, and then maybe she's got her hands up saying Mondays. I don't know. Right. Something stupid like that.
Yeah, that sounds like a good meme. It sounds like there's a lot that's going to go into it. I like that. I'm going to go with the Piccolo player. I just feel like NC State's going to be back in Pittsburgh. They're ripe for another upset, potentially against Kentucky. Joel Justice, one of their assistant coaches, came from Kentucky. Maybe a little bit of blood there. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I like those picks. Shout out to the
Riverboat
captain.
I didn't know it was a Piccolo. I thought you said a flute. This changes my mind. I might need another 8 minutes.
I've seen flute. I've seen Piccolo. I think it's specifically a piccolo, but flute sounds better. You know what I mean? That's always good. Sal, this is where we have some fun, where you set the line. So I'll turn it over to you. What say you when it comes to March Madness?
All right, now you're not going to find anything on FanDuel, any of these. Not that you're not going to find anything. You can find a ton on FanDuel. It's ridiculous how much.
Especially in North Carolina right now.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yes, you're all legit and kosher in North Carolina. But here's something that I'm throwing out there. Maybe FanDuel will adopt some of these. Over under 3.5 days before a committee member ends up with a horse's head in his or her bed, courtesy of Rick Pitino. You know, he's very upset. St. John's was not chosen to the Big East. Practically no one was chosen for the Big East. But does he retaliate in such a violent measure?
He says, I'm not bitter. I'm getting better. And then he proceeds to tweet very bitter things right after he says this, Sal. So I can't get a read on where Rick Pitino really stands. He's very upset about Seton Hall not being in the tournament. He's also upset that the committee said that his son's team, New Mexico, would not have been in the tournament unless they won the Mountain West tournament. So Rick Pitino has a lot of gripes with the committee, and that is not good for the committee. So I think 3.5 days. I'll take the under. I think it's
under.
Things are being plotted right now. As we sit here. Okay. So something's happening.
By the way, if this happens, you and I are being called
in. We're in trouble.
That's not going to be pretty. Yeah, Pitino, didn't he want nothing to do with this team? He's like, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And now he's upset that he's not in the postseason. All right, how about this? There will be a buzzer beater in the Thursday-Friday games. Used to be able to bet this. I can maybe find it at minus 170 is the no buzzer beaters, plus 135 for yes. Which way are you going? Thursday-Friday, 32 games.
I'm going to say let's get a buzzer beater on both days. We've had some crazy buzzer beaters throughout the season. I can barely even say it because they're so crazy. Bedlam, to say the least. Jared Lucas for Nevada had one of the best ones, a half-court heave this year. There's been a lot. You know, that's what college basketball is about. So I'm going to say, yeah, both days we get buzzer beaters. What say you,
Sal? Wow, you only need one out of the 2 days for this to hit.
Okay, great.
You know, I bet no the last 3 years, and it has not been a buzzer beater. And the thing is, Tate, they'll put time back on the clock sometimes. sometimes you get a break like that. But I'm no fun. I'm the don't pass guy. I'll probably bet against Caitlin Clark going to the Final Four. I'm not going to be fun. You'll see that in Vegas, how little fun you'll have with me. One last one. Over under 10.5 wins out of 16 games for our Race to 10 extravaganza this Thursday, Friday in Las Vegas at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club. We're going to be there. It's going to be me. It's going to be you. It's going to be nephew Kyle Harry, my buddy Harry. We're going to bet all 16 of the early games Thursday and Friday, betting a team to win 10, to get it to 10. I don't even know what we're doing. We're getting $10 out if we win. That's going to be fun.
It's going to be a great time, and I'm going to take the over because I think we're going to be in good spirits. I think Harry's going to be locked in. Harry's been texting me factoids about all these teams. He's like basically a media guide for me. Some things, not sure I need to fact check. Other things, I'm just enjoying the ride, you know, as I see Harry's brain kind of work in real time. But I'll take the over. I think we're going to hit some. And a lot of times the teams that get the 10 first don't actually win the game. So there's a little note.
You've
for
seen
you,
Harry's so. Brain? To me, that's even more fascinating than anything we talked about. All
I think so, too. Yeah, it's pretty good. Sal, thanks for setting the lines. That was a lot of fun. We're going to have fun in Vegas. Looking forward to that. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to do some line look-aheads with Cousin Sal. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're still here with Cousin Sal, and we're now going to do some line look-aheads because guess what? We got the NCAA tournament starting. Sal, how fired up are you? Yeah, I mean,
let's
look at us.
It, buddy.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought? And let's start with the number 6 seed, South Carolina, taking on Oregon. Oregon plus 1.5 in this game. They're the 11 seed, but they just won the Pac-12 tournament. Your son Archie is going to school at Oregon, so he is obviously invested in this team. What say you, Sal? Do you like the Ducks in this one?
Archie's a freshman and in Eugene. And yeah, first of all, I wonder what kind of odds you could have got on Oregon making the postseason basketball, but not football with the lineup, the squad they had set forth in the fall. But I told my son to enjoy it because once they move conferences, they're probably not going to get another bid for his duration of college. But Gamecocks shoot a lot of threes. You could live and die by the three. I'm hoping they're stiff coming out. Oregon's guards are good. Cousinard, Shellstad could take over the game. Dante's healthy. I kind of like Oregon, right? They're clicking on all cylinders, surging. They win by 10. And remember, they made the Sweet 16 the four times they made the tournament, the last four times.
Yeah, I saw Oregon in person when they came to play USC in Los Angeles, and I was impressed with just the physical size of this team. I mean, they passed the eye test, to say the least, and they got good guard play. And they're a team that should have been in the tournament anyway. They just kind of took a while to click gears this season. So I
was
like
at that game too. They didn't exactly pass the eye test because I was 75 rows up and you were on the court, so it's a different kind of eye test.
I saw a few other things down there. Shout out to Bronny James. He's gonna be in the NBA draft apparently, so we'll see what happens there. Next game, South Kansas, number 4 seed, taking on Samford plus 8.5 in this game, a team that likes to press. They're gonna be playing in Salt Lake City. This is a trendy upset pick. What say you, Sal?
No, I mean, God bless this team. They smoked the Southern Conference. Buckyball is fun to say. I know you're going to say it 1,000 times this week. But really, you look at out of conference, they lost by 43 to Purdue. Samford did. They lost by double digits to Virginia Commonwealth. It's kind of ugly. Kansas, on the other hand, obviously not the same Kansas team. 12 bench points a game, which is like 336th in Division I. It really all depends on Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough Jr. if they get him back. If they do, and it's trending like they're going to, I think they win this game by 12 or more. I'm going to take the Jayhawks.
Yeah, the good news is that Hunter Dickinson is in the Skims campaign for Kim Kardashian, so he is one of the March All-Stars, which means he's probably going to play, so that is good news. next game, we got number 11 New Mexico taking on number 6 Clemson. Clemson is the 6th seed, but they are not the favorites in this game, plus 2.5. What do you see here, Sal? Do you like New Mexico to get the win?
Yeah, like you said, this is the biggest discrepancy between seed and point spread. 2.5 points for a 6th seed as an underdog. Clemson, pretty good, but a little deceiving because they went 10-1, 11-1 to start the season, then very average. They lost Wake Forest last game of the season, got smoked by BC in the ACC tournament. Meanwhile, Richard Pitino's team, 8th in tempo versus 206. It's going to be a very, very strange game. One's up and down, one likes to slow it, but I like Jalen House and Jamal Mashburn Jr. to light it up. I'm going to go with New Mexico.
Yeah, and this has been a battle throughout the year. The ACC and the Mountain West, just from the conference standpoint and how many teams are going to get in the tournament. So this is kind of a statement game, I feel like, for the Mountain West. They felt like they got disrespected with seeds. Yep. Clemson comes in as a sixth seed, and they have a great front court. You know, Ian Sheflin, PJ Hall, both really good players. But I think that backcourt, Joe Girard, who's also in the Skims campaign, is going to have a tough time with Donovan Dent, Jalen House, and Jamal Mashburn Jr. So let's track to the future, Sal, and look at a little fun nugget here. Gonzaga to make the Sweet 16. You can get this for plus money. Gonzaga, obviously a very talented team, but yes, plus 144. No is minus 178. Do you see a path where the Zags could get to the Sweet 16?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they could win their first game and then beat, you know, the winner of this Kansas game, right?
Right.
It depends if and it's going to be, you know, a not as great Kansas team. That'll probably be a pick 'em in the second round. So I think there is some value here. I know 7 is the most losses Gonzaga has come into this tournament with in the last dozen years or so, but I think they're undervalued. They're going to be the second team since 2021 to finish the season in top 10 in offensive efficiency and top 50 in defensive efficiency. That's your KenPom talking again, Tate. I don't know who the other team is. I'm too lazy to look it up, but I think Mark Few gets it done. I think there's value in plus 144.
Yeah, the bad news for Mark Few is that Will Wade, who's the head coach of McNeese State, he basically said that one of their guys on staff, one of their assistant coaches, he calls him Brandon Brackets, he had forecasted that they were going to play Gonzaga as the 12 seed, and he had been scouting Gonzaga for the past couple of weeks. So I just saw that little nugget with Will Wade. So that's the only deterrent there, is that maybe Will Wade and his crazy staff has been able to scout Gonzaga more than most teams would be able to.
But that seems illegal. I don't think that should be allowed.
Yeah, the bracketology. Maybe we banned that. So I like the nickname, though, Brandon Brackets.
That is fun. Brandon Brackets.
Yeah, shout out to Will Wade. He's trying to make a statement so he can get a high major job again. Let's track to the future and look at the national championship odds because they are fascinating. We got UConn as the favorite, plus 420. Houston, plus 550. Purdue, plus 700. My Tar Heels, a little bit further down the board at plus 2,000. Antonio Brown was asked who he picked to be the Super Bowl or the national champion. He probably thought he was talking about the Super Bowl, but he says Houston plus 550, Sal. What say you? Who do you like here and what odds look the best?
AB has some rock solid opinions lately. I have to go with that. First of all, I look at the value of the one seed Tar Heels at 20-1 is kind of ridiculous, right?
Right.
That's way high. But my same reasoning is for taking Purdue here. I know everybody's waiting for them to get upset by the 16 seed or maybe even the second round. But 7-1, I think there's decent value. And they have an easy-ish path, right? TCU and then that Gonzaga-Kansas mess we're talking about where one or both teams might not even be there for that game. So Painter, I think, gets the monkey off his back, gets his team to the Final Four, and then we'll figure out what we're going to do with the 7-1. Zach Edey, 24 a game? He lives at the free throw line, and Lance Jones is a great addition. I like plus 700. I'm sorry, Tate. I'm not going Tar Heels.
Yeah, it's okay. I like Lance Jones. I think he's a big addition to help with that backcourt. And Braden Smith last year against FDU had 7 turnovers, and that was really the difference in this game. When they have a small margin of error, Purdue does. So when they turn the ball over, things can go bad quickly. But the good news is their 2 seed is Tennessee. Rick Barnes has his own tortured history in March. So if they get to the Elite Eight, they play the 2 seed. Both coaches are, you know, it's kind of a standoff to see which one is finally going to succeed and get to the Final Four. Rick Barnes for the second time, obviously, had the TJ Ford team. But we love that. We love to see that. It's going to be a fun situation. I'll take my Tar Heels 20-1. I like the value there. But last thing, Sal, before I let you go, let's do the Tate debate. There is a new world, a new time when it comes to March Madness. We obviously have phones in our pockets at all times. But there is something nostalgic about paper brackets, printing them out, and that whole journey. So what say you, Sal? Are you a printout brackets guy? I would assume so. Or do you like the digital on your phone version? What say you?
Definitely print out. I mean, you saw that dumb pad I was writing on for the last four weeks trying to pick the 65th and 66th best team for hours and hours.
You were 68 out of 68. Congratulations.
68 for 68. Lenardi can't even say that. But I like the printout mainly because when your team, you have the team to win it all, bows out on Friday, you could use it to slash your wrists a little bit. It takes a little bit, but a paper cut. No, I would say printout for sure, unless you're running a pool and you have to collect them because then you have a bunch of office idiots coming in like, oh, I forgot to pick this game, and can I get a copy of my bracket and stuff like that? I don't know what voice that is. That might be you, Tate. I'm not sure. But,
I think that, yeah, that was my
I'm
own
gonna go
voice.
Print out.
Yeah, I think print. I got the printout bracket in my hand.
Look at you.
There's nothing better than just holding a bracket, looking at it. You start playing out scenarios in your head. And you mentioned the pool. You know, when you're doing a pool and people turn in brackets, they can lie. They can write MSU like we were talking about, or UT.
Right.
So you have that factored in. But just for your at home, just for your own recreational use, print out a bracket. That's a PSA here from Through the Ringer. So we'd love to see that. Sal, where can we find all your work? And then we'll let you go enjoy your Tuesday and the start of the NCAA tournament in Dayton.
Against All Odds, it's going to air on Friday, and Cutting Sal's Winning Weekend on Thursday. You get your March Madness preview, and then it's going to be me, you, and Harry at the Jimmy Kimmel Comedy Club Thursday and Friday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're going to give out $10 bills if our team should get to 10 first before those loser teams do.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be a fun week. It's the best time of the year. Thanks again, Sal, and we'll see you on Thursday live from Las Vegas.
Get some rest, Tate.
I'll do my best.